Some of the hotter days of summer can convince you that it's just too hot in the afternoon for any living thing to be out and about. But if you tend a garden, it seems it's never too hot for the bugs that want to eat your fruits and flowers. They still show up, even when it's broiling outside. Early in the pandemic, when many people took up gardening for something to do, we reached out to Jackson County Master Gardeners and found Lynn Kunstman, who joins us weekly during the growing season to field our many questions on successful gardening. Lynn, welcome back.
Hi.
And what do you know? I'd planned to talk about bugs this week anyway, because you introduced me to flea beetles recently, but squash bugs come to the top of the list thanks to Deb, no town given, who emailed in to say, "Help! Squash bugs have invaded my garden and have destroyed most of my squash and pumpkins. I have tried Seven Dust and also an insecticide with Neep. Is there anything that works? And do these little devils lay eggs that will hatch in the soil next year? Thanks," says Deb.
So the eggs of those critters are on the backs of your squash leaves. They're in usually the interstices between the veins, and they are copper-colored eggs that the females lay in clusters, both on the stems, usually on the underside, and on the underside of the leaves. And those can be removed by hand-picking with duct tape rolled on the back of your, rolled backwards on your hand. You just roll the duct tape across them and lift the eggs. But if they have gotten to the point where they are actually destroying the vines, then you are probably looking at a nuclear option, which is neem oil. Mm-hmm. And you want to spray that late and or Captain Jack's, what is it called? There's a Captain Jack's organic spray that you can get that will take out squash bugs. And you want to spray that after the sun goes down and the bees are not flying, and because you'll kill your squash bees if mm-hmm. you don't do it, or before the sun comes up, before the squash bees have come out. Keep it away from the flowers if you can, because the male squash bees sleep in those squash flowers. So you really want to be very careful when you're using those sprays in your on your squash plant and target the areas where you're seeing nymphs and adults. The adults are easily captured, like I've said before, and squished or thrown in a bucket of soapy water. Mm-hmm. Once the nymphs hatch, the little eggs hatch, then you've got lots of little creepy crawlies of all stages all over the plant. They can be picked up with the tape if you're doing it by hand. They're appalling things, and they can get away from you very quickly. If you're not checking your squash plants daily, they are going to overrun you. So you need to keep on. They will. I mean, I've had people stop growing squash because the squash bugs were such a problem.
Wow.
And they couldn't monitor their plants daily. Looking behind every squash leaf, the underside of every squash leaf, is very tedious, back-breaking kind of stuff. But that's kind of what you have to do to get those eggs and get them out of there.
Yeah, I have been checking the squash myself recently. I got the patty pan squash out there. Boy, there were a couple of big ones on there yesterday. Of course, they were stuck together, copulating.
That's usually how you see them. They're up on top just having a party. And, that means that then you've got eggs on the underside of leaves, so you've really got to check the leaves.
The thing about the squash, because believe me, I heard about them from you for a good year before I actually encountered them in person. And the first time you put your hands on one, it's like, this thing's big, like a toad almost. Big. I'm exaggerating by quite a bit, but still, it's got quite a bit of body mass to it.
Yeah, and they smell bad. they do. I mean, when you crush mm-hmm. them, it's a really stinky, icky odor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, they are related to stink bugs, right?
I guess. I don't know.
They sure look alike. Yeah. I can get confused between the brown marmorated stink bugs and the squash bugs.
Yeah.
But the squash bugs seem a little,
they're
larger.
They're a little more elongated than stink bugs. Stink bugs tend to have a shorter body. Yeah.
So with the double stick tape technique, is it a good idea to tap it against your skin a couple times? Because I'm just concerned about whether you actually could tear up the leaves a little bit in addition to getting the eggs off.
Well, it does tear up the leaf a little bit, but so what? I mean, the leaf is still that's a big area, and it's going to keep photosynthesizing even with a hole in it.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be fine. But yeah, I just roll that tape across those eggs and they come right off. So it's very effective.
And then what do you do with them? Just chuck them in the trash?
Yeah, I throw them in a bucket of soapy water
along with
the adults that I'm pulling off. So
right.
then they just, they dissolve, they, well, the soap dissolves the cuticle on the egg.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. The same reason we wash our hands and for viruses, we're destroying the fat layer on the outside. Yeah. So let's see. So it sounds like it's a fairly intensive kind of process then, as we've talked about before. But so if Deb is trying to go out after the stuff, and you mentioned let's see, Captain Jack's, is it Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew?
Probably.
Okay.
And so I know my husband uses that occasionally when I can't keep on top of the bugs just by hand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been effective for us.
All right. So a fair amount of time, it sounds like, daily to at least look for.
Yeah, I mean, I spend 10, 15 minutes a day, you know, going through each, and I only have one zucchini mound, but checking each leaf, underneath each leaf and the underside of each stem to take those eggs off. Yeah.
Will, and they'll show up in the pumpkins too, will they?
Yeah, pumpkins, even cucumbers, anything in that cucurbitaceae family,
mm-hmm.
Anything in the squash family. Yep.
All right.
But they prefer summer squash.
They prefer the summer squash? Okay. All right.
They do. Yeah, there are some squash that are a little more resistant to them.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, and I've noticed the way they can work over the surface of those things, too. The vegetables themselves get a good chewing from a squash bug. Yeah. Lynn Kunzman back with us on the Jefferson Exchange for our Master Gardeners segment. She's from Jackson County Master Gardeners and has answers to many questions, and as we pointed out pretty much weekly now, there are no dumb questions. At least I hope so, because I ask most of them. But join me in asking questions of Lynn about what's going on in your own garden. 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Now, flea beetles came up because we had that note from Pat in Camas Valley about, almost 3 weeks ago now, I think.
Right, that photo, of her tomato plant. Right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You think those are flea beetles?
So, yeah, absolutely. Any kind of little shot eating of holes in leaves like that. And that we actually have there are actual flea beetles that specialize on members of the tomato, potato, tobacco family. But I don't know if that's what that was, but it's a flea beetle of some kind. There are like five different ones in the United States. And so those are little tiny, tiny beetles that fly into your crop and then just eat those little holes. Now, if you've got a vigorously growing plant, they're probably going to do damage to the lower vegetation, and then the plant is going to outgrow their ability to predate it, and you'll be fine. If you've got a very young, tender plant, then you have more of an issue. And there are several ways to deal with flea beetles. They come earlier in the season. They mm-hmm. usually come, you know, right after the cool weather in the season. And what you can do is plant, there are cultural things you can do. You can make sure you're planting in warm soil if you're putting out transplants, because if the plant is just sitting there, it's a sitting duck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it needs to be growing vigorously. You can use row covers, which is that white remate material, right, that you can cover your plants with. Until they get really growing and established, then pull it off when they start to blossom. That'll keep the beetles are flying, so they can't get through that. You can remove mulch before you plant. Pull the mulch away because they overwinter in mulch, and so get them kind of away from the base of the plant while you're planting, and then wait until the plant really takes off to pull the mulch back around. But the really best thing, cultural practice-wise, I think, is planting a trap crop.
Mm-hmm.
So if you plant radish seeds down, you know, throughout your garden as you're planting your transplants, radishes will pop up very quickly. They're a nice, juicy, succulent leaf that will draw the beetles to that because they want new, fresh growth. And so they're going to go to that first, and they're going to leave your transplants alone. So trap crops are a really great and effective way, a cultural practice that you can do to keep the flea beetles off your desired vegetable.
Which is almost neighborly of you as a gardener when you think about it, because you're saying, here, you know, you can have this.
Yeah,
leave me this and you can have that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you go in and think about biological controls, the things that predate flea beetles are raconid wasps, which are little tiny, tiny, tiny wasps. If you provide those wasps with food in your garden, and that would be stuff like alyssum, you know, if you're companion planting alyssum, which has a tiny, tiny flower that those wasps can utilize, or chamomile, catnip, buckwheat, any of those things with little tiny flowers that the wasps can come and utilize for food as adults, then those wasps will then go and lay their eggs in those beetles and parasitize them. So that's a great way to get your garden more healthy, keep your garden with those beneficial predators and parasitoids that you want.
It's quite an ecosystem that you're talking about developing then, but a more complete kind of circle of life.
Right. That's what we're aiming for. And that takes, if you're just starting gardening, that's going to take, you know, several years to really establish those populations in your yard by planting those companion plants, those plants that are beneficial to the predatory and parasitoid wasps and beetles that you want, and hoverflies that you want to come in to eat the things that are bothering your vegetables. You need to get those established, and so you need to think about everything that needs to be there to keep your garden healthy.
So it's not just like, I'm going to plant this and grow this. It's, you know, a lot of other stuff if you want to be at this for a while to make your own. I mean, ultimately, you'll make your own work less, it sounds like, because a lot of the things will be dealing with themselves.
Once you build a healthy soil ecosystem and a healthy vegetation ecosystem, it's gonna take care of itself. It's going to be self-sustaining. I mean, that's what sustainability is about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it keeps going. Okay, back to the point about the mulch, pulling the mulch back to keep the flea beetles away. Would you just switch out to a different kind of mulch potentially?
Not necessarily. I mean, what I do is I pull the mulch back off the rows that I'm going to be planting. I plant the plant and let the soil warm up. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the mulch is going to keep the soil cool in the spring. So if you pull it back in the spring, allow the soil to warm up, put your plants in warm soil, and then wait until they start really growing and taking off. And then you can pull the mulch back up close to the base of the plants, not necessarily touching the base of the plants, because that allows critters to move in and chew on stems and stuff. But, you know, around the base of the plant, then it should be fine.
To part of that point, though, you're just talking about, you're trying not to provide ladders for the creatures to climb up into your plants.
Right, or cover. I mean, especially like in the case of shrubs and trees, you never want to put mulch right up to the base of the woody stem of the tree or the shrub that you're putting in. You want to leave 2 to 3 inches out from that, because actual rodents will travel under the mulch and get to the wood and chew on the cambium layer of the tree. And so it's always good practice to keep the mulch not in contact with the actual stem of the plant that you're providing that mulching cover for. Yeah.
Lynn Kunzman back from Jackson County Master Gardeners for our weekly visit during growing season to talk about ways to keep things that we intended to grow growing, and to perhaps discourage the things that we didn't want to grow, or at least move them elsewhere. And you can join us with your questions about gardening. 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Not totally off subject. We're still talking gardening, but as we're talking about soil temperatures in the spring, I don't have a thermometer. I have the moisture meter and the pH, but I don't have a soil temperature reader. So how warm does the soil get on some of these super hot days?
I haven't gone out and taken the soil temperature in my garden on those baking hot days. That's something I should do. But there are great, and I think a soil thermometer is one of the probably more important, the temperature thermometer is more important even than the moisture meter to me. It's and you can get them. It's like a little dial. It looks like a meat thermometer. You buy them at the nursery. And it actually has a little scale on it. So there's of course, the dial with the little red arm that tells you what temperature the soil is. But it also, there's information about, okay, at 50 degrees, you can safely plant these seeds in the soil and they'll germinate. At 60 degrees, you can plant these. 70, 80. It gives you the list of crops right there on that dial that you can put in when the soil is a certain temperature. So it's really handy, to know, yeah, I can plant radish seeds really, really early in the year, but I better not be putting in tomatoes and peppers when the soil is only 50 degrees because they're not going to do anything, you know.
They're not going to die on the soil, but will they just sit there until the soil is warm enough?
They'll just sit there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll just sit there, and they won't germinate until the soil is warm enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's why we start those kinds of summer crops in greenhouses, because we're bringing up the soil temperature in the pots so that for ideal germination.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, I realize that's something missing from my list. And we have talked about this before too, the idea that it just tells you which plants are good for those temperature ranges. So yes, right. Way to go. An email here from Samantha just came in. She says, hi, a deer is eating my potted tomato plant. Should I put netting over the 4-foot tall plant? But I'm concerned the deer might try to get through it and then get caught in the netting. And what do you recommend to keep them away? Thanks, says Samantha.
Yeah, no, I would maybe get some bird netting and put that over it, you know, make you sure you have some stakes kind of far out. Or if you have chicken wire, the deer's not going to be able to get through that. So if you want to wire around the plant, you know, when we were growing fruit trees where we lived on a forest interface and the deer were coming through and eating everything in the yard, we would put stakes in the ground around, you know, about 3 feet out from the tree, a triangle of stakes, and then stretch chicken wire around that to keep the deer out. And chicken wire is very effective. Deer don't like being tangled in stuff, and they're not, even if you use bird netting, they're probably not going to mess with it. They'll try and eat everything that's coming through, but you know, doubtful that they're going to climb up in there and try and, because they don't like getting their feet tangled up.
Right. Okay. So yeah, the chicken wire is relatively easy to work with, but right. I would recommend gloves for that, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And get it far enough out from the plant that the deer aren't going to be able to push it and get to the new shoots coming through. So, yeah.
I want to ask about, we talked a little bit about the vegetables, the fruits that crack a bit because they seem to be growing too fast. Is there anything that slows that down or prevents it from happening? Like I got a couple more cracked tomatoes out of the garden.
Yeah, not that I know of. I mean, there may be something you could go to Oregon Extension catalog and look up the specific tomato growing thing. I don't have it. I'm sitting out at the extension service right now. I don't have it, an ability to do that. But there are tomato specific tomato pamphlets that you can download and look. And I'll bet they address cracking fruit. But right off the top of my head, I just cut those cracked tops off.
You know? Yeah, well, that's what I did. I took it in. Yeah, sure, I ate what was left. It was fine. Yeah.
It's perfectly good fruit. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you can't market it, but we're not marketing stuff out of our garden. So if you get a split in a tomato, take the tomato in, cut the split part off, and use the tomato.
That is a really interesting part of it for me is to realize that, you know, the stuff just tastes really good coming right out of the ground, even if it just looks like something that no produce person would ever put on a shelf.
That's exactly right. I mean, we don't have to have perfect fruit and vegetables coming out of our yard. We can deal with a bug bite or a bird bite or a fat faced tomato, cut the bottom off the tomato and use the top half. We can utilize that stuff. And we don't need to freak out because we don't have stuff that looks perfect like you get in the store.
Right.
You know.
Let's see, some timing questions here about, we have a pumpkin vine, and should it be beyond flowers by now? Should there be little bulby things appearing on the vine by now?
Be, but this, you know, once again, this year has been such a weird year. Mm-hmm. We're having really late fruit sets on our vines, and so I'm just now, you know, seeing little watermelons and little, I'm not growing pumpkins this year, but you should be seeing pumpkins.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you've got squash bees that are there fertilizing those pumpkin flowers. And so those should be happening. And if you're not, then and you're feeling anxious about it, mm-hmm. Once again, get your paintbrush out, find the male flower, get some pollen, and then go to the female flower and spread it around.
And how do the male and female flowers look different from each other? How can you tell them apart?
Yeah, so male flowers are going to be, they're going to have a very long pedicel, a long stem, it looks like a long stem, and they're held up high, and they will have pollen inside of them. The female flowers will actually have a little ovary underneath them, the little immature thing that will become a pumpkin, and they're held down closer to the vine itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be pretty apparent. Those male flowers are big and open, and they have lots of pollen in them, and you probably see bees inside gathering pollen if you've got squash bees around your house. So, you can do some.
Any chance there are just male flowers out there, that it's just a bro show?
I don't know.
Because I actually was looking, because I remember I did read something about the ovaries, but I couldn't see any flowers that looked like the females.
Right, I don't know.
Oh, okay, well, I'll get back to you on that one myself, so we'll have something to share about next week about the pumpkin vines, the saga of the right. Riley pumpkin vines. This is actually not the name of the segment. This is our Master Gardener segment with Lynn Kunzman from Jackson County Master Gardeners, who joins us every Wednesday while she's getting set up out there at the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center. Lynn, always a pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
All right.